The Five Rings Podcast, Road to Tokyo on the Sports Podcasting Network. Your weekly fix leading up to the 2020 Olympic Games with Dwayne Rollins and Kevin Larame. Follow us and listen to us live on Twitter at Five Rings Podcast and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/Sports Podcasting Network for more content.
And good day, good night, and welcome to the Five Rings Podcast. I'm Kevin Larame, joined by Dwayne Rollins, as always. For some reason, the music didn't start, but that's okay. Dwayne, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. I'm sure you can add that in post for our podcast-only listeners, but we're happy to be on here right now talking Five Rings. A little bit of delayed this week. We had a lot of stuff pile up on us next week, but it's an important topic that we're going to be talking about today. Not the most fun topic, but one that we have to sort of tackle, I guess. Unfortunately.
No, exactly. It's an important topic. Of course, this stems from what happened in the England versus Bulgaria match in European qualifiers almost a week and a half ago now at this point. And of course, the match itself was stopped twice for racism. Of course, the monkey chants and other degrading behavior happened during that game, which resulted in the match being halted twice. And of course, a lot of ramifications might happen. We might see closed games for Bulgaria and pretty much slaps on the wrist. But how do you even handle a situation like this? And what seems to be happening more often than before? I don't know. Is it just because we hear about it more? Is it because it's pointed out more? Is it actually happening? I don't know.
No, it's happening more. It's because the world's gotten more nasty in the last.
That's true.
10 years or so. And that's, you know, there's a lot of reasons for that. I'm not going to get into any partisanship here, but there have been just discourse has become, it's been, for some reason, it's become acceptable in certain parts of the world to express behaviors that when I was growing up were thought to be that of history. But we've learned, you know, I was naive, you know, there's two white guys talking here. So perhaps we both were that this stuff had been stamped out somehow. That's what we were taught, but that was just a good feeling. But putting that societal stuff aside, when you're talking specifically about this sporting event that took place, yeah, the game was halted twice in Bulgaria. There was a big, this one's in particular, it seems like a turning point in this, and turning point in terms of how at least UEFA might be handling this moving forward, how certainly England will choose to handle this, the English national team will choose to handle this, in particular from the leadership of players like Raheem Sterling, might choose to deal with this forward, because the game was halted twice by a provision that was in the UEFA rules and has been in the UEFA rules for a decade now. But yet this is the first time we've seen it implemented, and this is most certainly not the first time that we have seen monkey chants or other racist stuff screamed at in UEFA settings. We've talked about it, you know, with well, in Syria, but we've talked about it recently on Soccer Today. So this is not a new thing, but what is new is the reaction, the ability to stop, or the willingness to actually stop this game based on the request of the players and the willingness of the players to do it. Now, Kevin, before I let you jump in, just so those who don't know, and there's some great articles out there and some great coverage. The Guardian in particular did a great job covering this in the fallout of the game. They had a full podcast that they came on in special and dedicated to it. So I encourage you to go back and listen to that. Some voices from England that were involved and have been involved in Stamp Out Racism type programs for a while. But look, what in the lead up to this, there was a lot of talk, and there was sort of, it was almost as if the Bulgarians were putting a middle finger up, say, oh, we can say this. And it speaks to what we talked about when we talked about the Syria stuff, where like these ultra type groups, they don't view it as a problem. They view this as just something that, well, yeah, we're just trying to get under their skin, which is ridiculous. And how do you even argue stuff like this? And this speaks to what I said off the top in terms of the discourse and humanity as a general has gone down in the toilet when it comes to this stuff. Yeah. So you have to go through the process of shutting these games down and eventually doing more than closing the stadium. The stadium was partly closed for this game due to a previous incident.
Well, there you go. So when is it enough? When do you actually do enough to discourage that type of behavior? Should you just, it happens once, you halt the game. All right. It happens again. All right. You lose the game by default. 3 points goes to the team victim of it. Or it's it becomes a convoluted point too, because sport is sport, and then you'll have weird things started happening too, where maybe opposing supporters will do the chants and blame. So it becomes such a situation that is terrible that what do you even do? Just awarding 3 points might not work. Stopping the game and just making the result nullified because of it might be a solution. It's a hard way to find a sporting ban or a sporting repercussion through a society behavior. It's hard to equivalate how to deal with this if you are the person deciding of the repercussion for that behavior.
Yeah, I mean, look, to speak specifically to this protocol, it's a kind of a three strikes, you're out sort of situation in the game. I mean, what the Bulgarian, I just didn't even call them ultras, what the Bulgarian idiots.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's a small percentage of probably that ultras group to begin with that is like this, because usually supporters group and ultras will go closer to the left side, which condones that behavior too. So it's a lot of stakes, yeah.
Yeah, although there are plenty of right-wing ultra groups in the world too. And, absolutely. You know, and anyone, you can't paint them in the same brush, both sides. But
exactly.
What they did, if you look at the protesting carefully, is they knew damn well what they were doing. It was highly organized heading into this game. They did what they needed to do. The game was stopped twice. As soon as the game was stopped the second time, they left on their own. They weren't kicked out. They weren't forcibly removed. They left on their own because they knew that if they did it a third time, that the game would be halted and Bulgaria would be punished. You know, it turns out that Bulgaria was punished on the field anyway. They lost the game 6-0. So,
which
know,
is
that,
deservedly. It's called karma. Doesn't matter if it's your supporters or you. You kind of shoulder the brunt of the blame there.
Yeah, well, precisely. And I mean, you know, in some level, the fact that it was such a blowout did allow the ultras to the ultras involved to do this protest, because they didn't really have much of a worry in terms of what it was going to mean in terms of the, on the pitch. And that's where you get complicated, as you mentioned. And I look, I'm glad that there is a protocol in place. I'm glad that they finally implemented it to a certain level, and it's been getting a lot of talk about it in the days that have followed it. I mean, we're one of the last people into this just by them, you know, our editorial schedule, but there have been a lot before us that have talked about this. That's all good things, but I have, you know, it's a flawed case, because why are you giving them three chances? Shouldn't it be one chance and you're out?
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, that's really, if we determine that making a monkey noise at an opposing player is something that should be not allowed at all, then it should be one and done.
Well,
now that's, sorry, go ahead, Kevin.
I was just going to say, I like to use analogies nowadays to just interchange things that I think are similar, and then it makes you wrap your head around it differently. Punching someone in the face, for me, is equivalent to making racist comments, if not even not as bad. So if you punch someone in the face once, and then again, does a third time really mean something? Are you not going to get arrested because you didn't punch a third time? No, after the one time, it should be over.
Yeah, if I go to the pub tonight and exactly. You know, I just decide to pop someone in the nose, I'm not getting a second chance, let alone a third, right?
Exactly. That's my point. So why are we viewing it differently for the chance?
Well, you shouldn't. And look, there is a safety issue at play here. I acknowledge this, and this is where it is complicated, that this just say for the sake of argument that they pushed it to the envelope to the very end and did have a third time and they had to close that game down, then yeah, there is the potential that you could have pushback in the stands, which means to me that the biggest thing that has to happen when you're talking about this stuff is that it has to be talked about, and it has to be talked about in the lead up to games. And when there is clearly an organized effort going on, which there was in the Bulgaria-England game, then maybe you don't even kick the damn thing off. You don't let these people in the stands. And yeah, when you're talking about ultra groups, there's a bit of dynamite here and some spark that you need to be conscious of, because not all of these groups are, you know, the cosplay versions that we see over here, most certainly. And some of them have not a lot to lose in their life, and this is all they have, and they will push back violently. And that is a real issue, and it's an unfortunate one.
Eastern European groups, especially. So Bulgaria, yeah. Croatia, and places adjacent to it have a different type of ultras culture, which over the years have been known to be one of the most violent and one of the most right-wing as well that you mentioned earlier. We've seen those happen in that part of the world too, not wanting to put them all together in the same basket, but that's where that culture originates from, in that mentality.
Yeah, and look, there's no easy answer to any of this stuff other than to actually deal with it. And is UEFA dealing with it in this particular case? I mean, they did have the protocols that were put in place. That is something. That is something. And something is better than nothing. I will say that. But we are having this conversation now, which is, I think, more what this is about, to try and, you know, putting up a banner, which is what they did. They closed the section and put, like, stamp racism out, blah, blah, blah. It's like hilarious. When, not hilarious. It's sad. But you know what I mean? Like, there's a true irony.
It's ironic. Yeah, it's ironic, I was going to say.
When this is taking place with these banners up, right? Like, it shows how stupid it is. Like, you're going to put a banner up and suddenly everything's going to be all right. No, it has to be a long-term conversation. It is not going to be stamped out in time. But the other thing you have to do is you have to support these players if they do walk off the pitch. Had England walked off, had England followed through with a third time, even if they weren't, you know, even if maybe the referees decided not to put it in the report that they heard the monkey chants, because they'll do that sometimes. And that could be out of their own ignorance, or it could be out of their own fear too. We don't know. Like, there's a lot of stuff, a lot of levels here. If you believe that, if you're the FA in England, if you're these players' agents, if you're these players' teammates, you have to support them. And I think that that's, you know, we talked about this today on Soccer Today in a slightly different level with payment stuff in Mexico. You need solidarity with the players here. And I think that that ultimately is might what would happen. If we continue to have these problems, and we, you know, England's no stranger to it either. And that's the other thing that falls out from this, is the Bulgarian FA president was saying, well, England's just as bad, which is, you know, whataboutism, which is, you know, part and parcel of the discourse today.
It's like, exactly, we did this to you, but what about this time in 19-something that you did?
Yeah, it's silly. it's like a ridiculous logical fallacy.
It's defending a point. It's just being defensive, right? That behavior of, yeah, but what about that time? What about you? But over this, when oftentimes what we see, those chants, they're not the cause. They're a symptom, right? They're the symptom. And I think we have to get to the cause of things, which might actually be the political climate that we live in 2019 in Europe, in America, in Canada, in most of the Eastern world as well. Right now, Western world, I mean. And Eastern too, the political climate seems to glorify acting against each other, and it seems to be okay to do terrible stuff like racism, but it's a more general conversation too. But what I mean is, I think it's time that, you know, we do take the action, and maybe the one strike you're out is the way to go, and it's going to get some backlash, and you're going to need some strong person in the right position as in president of FAs or if you have a president to stand for it, right? Because the one or two time a game gets canceled and it's not that important a game, it's all right. But the one time it's going to be a World Cup game or something that gets canceled for racism chance and rightfully, then you'll have more backlash, and that will be the litmus test, I guess.
Yeah, and well, you nailed it there in terms of who has to ultimately stamp this out with the stick, right? Like, you know, the stick rather than the carrot there has to be significant sanctions that really harm not just the pocketbook, but also like the pride and the scoreboard aspect of these teams. And yes, you shouldn't just, you know, ideally you don't want to punish multiple people for the actions of a few, but I think in these particular cases, you don't have much other option here. And what UEFA has, the one powerful thing that they do have, and I think that this is something they can do after the fact, when it is, there's no danger of violence breaking out, at least not immediately, is Bulgaria's been doing this. This is, they were in a semi-closed stadium. This happened. This is clear evidence at this point. 6 months, no UEFA games. You know what that includes? Includes the Champions League.
Oh,
and for some of the, funny. And that's, you know, they're not obviously going that deep in the Champions League typically, but at the same time, it is a punishment that would be significant to them and would significantly affect them on both a financial level and on an emotional sporting level. And
I guess that's the only way to do it. I guess, Dwayne, going after the pocketbook is the only way to truly make things change in this world.
Yeah. So. And look, let's put racism aside and talk about homophobia for a second, because we have an issue in this part of the world. that has been ongoing and that we have talked about a lot, which also is not being dealt with effectively, and that, of course, is the P chant on the goal kicks for the Mexicans. And we continue to ignore stuff like that. We continue to slap them on the wrist.
Well, I just have to say, the way, for the first time ever, a few weeks ago, a game was stopped in Mexico for that chant. So that's a first step as well there. So there is at least a law now, and they're willing to at least trying to start to apply it.
And look, you know what's going to happen, and this is the unfortunate reality of how fans are going to fan, right? And they're going to push back and be defensive and get their back up. So, you know, the day that you're going to – it's like a parenting thing, right? Like, you have to follow through with your consequences. So if the consequences, you're going to have points deducted in a World Cup qualifying campaign, let's just stick with Mexico for a second here, if the P-Chan happens in World Cup qualifying, which it will right now, then they need to follow through with that. And it's only going to take one or two times before the Mexican FA is going to be like, we're going to close the damn stadiums because we don't want to lose these points anymore. And then eventually this will stop to happen, because quickly, to any Mexican listeners out there, anyone who tells you that this is some longstanding tradition, well, they might be 12, because this tradition, because first off, it's about the mentality of someone who thinks that this is an appropriate thing. Also, I watched Mexico play in the 90s. No chant of the sort was happening on goal kicks then. And it's just all part of changing. And I think that, you know, supporters, leaders, and all those sort of people have to do their part too. But at the same time, you know, anyone who's been in that role before knows that you can't control the mentality of thousands of people in your stands. You have to just create an environment in which it's clear to those people that might go cross that line that's not a place they should go.
I totally agree. And speaking of Mexico, we did have a conversation today on Soccer Today where we talked about what happened in Mexico, players not being paid, which we're not going to rehash here. You can go watch and listen to Soccer Today if you want to hear about it. But for me, the postponing of a game between Dorados and Atlante because of narco traffickers fighting in the streets in the Sinaloa, Culiacan region does highlight something that is an issue in the future. Sporting events taking place in a difficult part of the world, in part that are not necessarily safe for everyone, how to deal with a sporting event at these places, how to accommodate safety of players, how to find ways to make place safer. I know that's a peace on earth, right? It's world peace. It's easy to say, yay, we all might want to strive for it, and taking action towards it is different. But when we're looking at Doha as well, the World Championship were held at track and field there. We're going to get a World Cup there in 2022. We have places in the world where they're going to host the Olympics, and basic human rights are not always respected for everyone. I'm looking at you, Beijing, in 2022, and more in the past too. How, as a society, do we change the fact that we see those as separate, as saying like, oh, the host country is one thing and what you do politically is different? How do we realize that both are related and the former is the propaganda agent of the latter?
Well, you have to ostracize them on a sporting level. And look, anyone who says that it doesn't work, maybe you're not old enough to remember apartheid. Maybe you're not old enough to remember South Africa being isolated from world sport. And I'm not going to suggest for a second that was anywhere close to the only thing that was causing the eventual destruction of that highly racist system. But it played a role. It played a significant role in isolating that country. And you isolate in other ways, too. You isolate through trade. You isolate through art, you isolate through sport. It all plays a role. So, you know, a lot of people want us to STS here, stick to sport, but you can't, especially when you're talking about a show like an Olympic show, because nationalism and all of this stuff is highly ingrained in what the Olympic movement is and what amateur sport worldwide is. And you cannot separate these issues. You have to address them face on. And too often, IOC, UEFA, FIFA, name your whatever national body or international body, I should say, has chosen to ignore it or flush it away or push it away and let the sport organizations deal with it or the local authorities deal with it and just ignore stuff that is blatant. That's how we get, you know, the rampant abuse on the drug side in Sochi. It's how we have, you know, games where, You know, we're playing it in why we have a Qatar World Cup. Let's be blunt, right? We're letting financial concerns completely overwhelm humanitarian concerns and the sport. You know, they you fall back on the, like I say, stick to sports. You fall back on, oh, it's just sports. It doesn't matter. Well, no, it does, because you're legitimizing these places. And I have so much ambivalence when it comes to the Middle East in these competitions, because I'm a Western valued person. I have concerns about a lot of aspects of a lot of things that happen in that part of the world. But I also understand that every part of the world has different ethics and different things. So I don't want to exclude and isolate unless there's a legitimate reason for it. And right now, when I watched the World Championship track and field, the athletics championship there in Doha, I didn't necessarily see anything that would concern me greatly for the World Cup in 2022. Now, that said, I'm well familiar with how those stadiums are getting built and all the problems around that. So,
which I guess we have to say a little bit about it. If you don't know, a lot of workers that are working on the stadiums for the World Cup in 2022 have had their passports seized. It's part of the way to get paid. You come in there, you're going to get a job, you give them their passport, and then reason, oh, wait, you're not getting paid anymore, but you can't leave. You don't have your passport. There's been documented cases of this. Seen thousands and thousands of workers died because of bad conditions, which we don't even hear about anymore, Dwayne. People dying, constructing the stadiums for 2022, the World Cup. But, you know, I can bet money that it's still happening. We're just not talking about it anymore. There's been over 1,000 documented deaths working on stadiums in Qatar 2022, which is crazy when you think about it, and the working conditions and so on. If you want to make a Google search and go into the rabbit hole, you'll learn a lot, and you probably won't feel good about 2022 Qatar World Cup. And let's not kid ourselves, it was the same for the 2019 track and field World Championships in Qatar.
Yeah, just a slightly less or smaller scale, because there was only one stadium to worry about. Or, you know, you look at Beijing in 2008, the Summer Olympics, like how many people could that opening ceremony have fed? And you get into questions like that, you know, that the fireworks display alone probably could have fed a province in China. If you remember, it was quite dramatic, entertaining, no doubt, but nonetheless, was it the right sort of scale of resources to put towards it? And this is an argument that since this show started that we've been making on this show, the hold hard benefits up, benefit kind of hosting stuff, and you know, the Olympic movement is having to deal with this because, well, its very existence, continued existence for years and years to come depends on their ability to deal with that very real issue. When you're talking about human rights, look, you know, we all have our own option to check our own selves out and to do what we can on an individual level. When it comes to 2022, which is the next one really that we'll have to make these kind of decisions for, you know, we can choose to ignore that World Cup, but we're sports fans. And you know what? We probably, for the most part, won't, particularly if our team's in there. And I'll go even further. I don't think that we as individual sports fans should be the ones that have to make these decisions. We should not have to choose to put aside our enjoyment of life. Stuff that is not causing anyone any issues, is not causing any problems on our end of things. We shouldn't have to sacrifice that. It should be the organizing committees. It should be the FIFA world bodies. It should be those people that are addressing these issues front on. And now that we have, you know, Qatar's not going anywhere, as I said, now that it's there, the fact that there are people dying in building stadiums, there should be more being said about this. There should be more attention being cast upon this, and not just from the usual suspects, you know, the Andrew Jennings of the world. They come off as old men yelling at clouds after a while to a lot of people. I'm not saying they are, but that's how they come off to a lot of people. And they start to be like, you know, the Charlie Brown's teacher in the background. You need more voices making these arguments out there, and we need to have these conversations constantly, even though you might want to stick to sports.
Yeah, and stick to sports. Sports is everything. Life is almost more sports than sports is sports sometimes, so stick to sports means stick to life, I guess. And just thinking about, like, we're not trying to solve anything here. We're just talking, and I think that's important to just do. Talking without having the pressure of solving everything. Talking in the hopes of progressing a conversation or starting a conversation. We've had this conversation before, Dwayne, as what to do to prevent the use of the sporting events that we love as propaganda vehicles for either governments, dictatorship, ideologies. Just a lot of cases that have been documented over the years of Olympics used for multiple propaganda forums. Of course, the Hitler Games and a lot more in history. There's always been an ideology of a utopia of sports and sporting events that should be used in a way that maybe is not a vehicle for propaganda. And the ideology of Greece back 2,000 years ago and so on, and more than that, where a single hosting place was the true place where everyone would gather to, right? You had a one place. So maybe we should create Olympia country somewhere, or maybe Switzerland as the neutral country that they used to be or that they still are sometime. Maybe they should host the Olympics all the time. Everyone goes there. Maybe that's the only solution. Maybe I'm being a bit too lighthearted and this needs to be taken seriously. But outside of having one place that we hold the Olympics or all sporting events all the time that is devoted of political branding, it would always be part of the conversation.
You can strip the flags away from the athletes, there's no doubt, but we all knew who that, you know, white with black lettering symbol was in Doha. You know, the guys with the old, you know, VOV or SOV on the back of their name, right? Like, you know, they tended to like vodka is what I'm saying. We knew where they're from. So you can strip that flag away from them all you like, but the reality is we're all going to figure out where they're from. Even if you were to, the X Games, for instance, the X Games don't have any nationalism attached to it, but we all know if you watch them, we know that skateboarder dude is from Toronto versus Buffalo versus
California,
Finland.
Yeah.
Or Brazil now.
Skater dude from Buffalo? If you give me a skater dude from Buffalo that makes it all the way to the X Games, I'll be happily surprised.
Well,
I'm just kidding. But
maybe snowboarder, but yeah.
that's he probably is very good.
Yeah, but I mean, the point is that the you can't completely strip the nationality away from amateur international sport. It's always going to be there. So you have to find out how to balance it to the right level. And, you know, not only I would say that, I mean, I like the fact that there's flags attached to it. It gives you a team to cheer for and a team to cheer against as long as you can keep the perspective there, right?
That's what it has to be. The flags are not actually representing the country. They're representing the name of the team that you support, and the name of the team you support is the people from your country, I guess. So Team Canada is different than Canada itself. And I guess that's the way we have to think about it, but it's not. And we're not going to find a solution. We're not going to change the world. But at least if we can talk about it, someone that might be in position to change it is listening. And maybe they will act on it.
The IOC is listening to our podcast. Let's hope they haven't put a copyright violation against us yet. So maybe they're not, but we'll see. Right. No, it's important to have the dialogue, as you're saying.
Yeah, and we're called the Five Rings. There's no Olympics. We don't have the logo. We're not violating any trademarks. It's all copyrighted of the sports.
Could be talking about diamonds. We don't know.
Exactly. Well, we're actually, this is all copyrighted of the Sports Podcasting Network 2019. On that note, you can always follow Dwayne on social media at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Larame. We'll come back to sports next week. We'll, of course, review the World Gymnastics Championship that finished last week in Stuttgart. We'll talk more about it next week. Of course, last week, Dwayne and I were traveling, covering special games in Soccer World, and, of course, we had to travel and everything, so we're back now in both our respected cities and working towards everything that we need to do, and Road to Tokyo is one of them. And we'll be back next week with more Stick to Sports podcast. But for today, this is what you get, because we had to talk about it and we wanted to. But until next time, as always, for Dwayne Rollins, I'm Kevin Larame, and we wish you a great podium. If you can be wished a great podium, we do. If not, own your podium, folks.